Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. I'm John Manuel, joined by Jim Callis today. It's the weekend of the draft signing deadline. We're recording this on the Friday prior to the weekend. The draft signing deadline is midnight on Monday, August 15th. Jim, when a team if a team doesn't have their player signed by 12:01, when Tuesday starts and Monday ends, they lose the rights to those players. So it's the fifth year of a draft signing deadline, Jim. And let's just quickly, the CBA is up this year. I think all baseball fans know they're renegotiating the collective bargaining agreement. We've reported repeatedly that the draft will be a big issue, we think, in the draft, in the CBA. Let's assess these last 5 years, because this year, Jim, seems like the absurd extreme of the unintended consequences of the signing deadline, and that we have a giant pool of unsigned players. And you have a general manager like Dayton Moore quoted this week in Kansas City saying, no, they aren't having daily discussions with the advisor for Bubba Starling. And, you know, because there's nothing to talk about. And he's saying that less than a week before the deadline. Assess these 5 years of the deadline and kind of how we got to this point where so many players are unsigned.
Well, I think we got to this point because MLB just does not understand the simple reality that teams want to sign the players at the end of the day. You can come up with all these mechanisms and negotiating strategies that MLB thinks is going to give teams more hand, to make a little Fast Times at Ridgemont High reference, or a Seinfeld restaurant, Seinfeld reference. But it doesn't, because teams in the end want to sign the players. And you go back to the last CBA, and they put in a signing deadline, and they added increased compensation for unsigned picks. It used to be if you didn't sign your first round pick, you got a pick at the end of the sandwich round, and that was it. Now if you don't sign a pick in the first two rounds, you get essentially the same pick next year, and if you don't sign your third round pick, you get a supplemental third round pick the following year. And MLB was convinced when they won those concessions that, okay, now the teams have all the leverage, you know, or not all the leverage, but a lot more leverage. Players can't hold out until a week before next year's draft, and now teams can walk away from players because of the compensation. Well, teams don't want to walk away from the players, so it doesn't work. And the deadline part of it didn't add any leverage, because agents just need a deadline. It could be the day after the draft. It could be 3 weeks after the draft. It could be August 15th. It could be a week until before the next year's draft. And these players are going to get pretty much the same money, because the teams – will just get taken to the deadline by the agents. This year what's happened, it seems like the strategy for MLB this year is to tell teams, especially with college juniors and especially with a majority of the first round picks so far, you have to make a formal written offer within 15 days of the draft. And there are a lot of players out there, you know, first rounders, college juniors, who got offered MLB's recommended bonus offer within 15 days of the draft, and that's been it. And I don't know when MLB is going to tell teams, okay, now you can negotiate. But that's why things have been so slow this year, not just in the first round, but if you look, there are a lot of unsigned college juniors all over the draft.
That's MLB, amazing, to be honest, Jim. To me, that's almost more amazing than the fact that we only have four of the first well, we have five of the first 25, 27 draft picks signed. The fact that college juniors – who have about as little leverage. I mean, I know they have some leverage. I could go back as a senior, but these guys don't want to go back as seniors. And the fact that there's this giant pool of college juniors unsigned at this point is kind of remarkable. I think that's what really tells the tale.
They've created ill will. Because here's the reason they're unsigned, and a lot of these guys probably are going to sign close to slot or for a little over slot. You know, we saw yesterday – you know, Anthony Mayo signed for $625,000, which is a little over slot. Adam Conley agreed to $625,000, which is a little over slot. B.A. Volmuth signed for slot with the A's in the third round. But the problem is, it's not that these guys – I wouldn't even call it holding out. I think people are just antagonized on the player side of this. Because if you're a college junior and you're basically being told you have to sign for slot, well, who came up with these slots? Were they negotiated?
Right.
No. The slots are lower than they were in 2006, which is ridiculous when you think of how much the revenues of baseball have grown. And what happened was when they instituted the extra compensation and the signing deadline in 2007, MLB, like I said, thought, okay, we control the draft now. The teams are in control. So they cut the slot recommendations by 10%. And what happened was a lot of guys held out just to get the 10% cutback, and they got it. And they've basically educated players and agents that the longer you wait, the more you get paid. You know, if you're, you know, if you get paid more if you sign August 15th than you do if you sign August 1st, than you do if you sign July 15th. And then agents basically, I mean, I talked to a lot of agents, and they basically regard the slots only as that's the number you can sign for right away. They otherwise think it has no basis in fact. And last year, you know, I lined up the top 50 slots in baseball, what those were worth, and then what the top 50 bonuses in baseball were worth. And the slots were 37% lower than the bonuses. And I do think if you had a reflection of reality that the slots should not be lower than 2006, that they either grew from 2006 based on, say, the growth of revenues in baseball, or just if you pegged them to what the bonuses actually were the year before, and we had slots this year that were 37% higher, which would be a lot more realistic, then I think you'd have a lot more guys signed by now. And so I blame baseball for this problem, because they're heavy-handedly telling guys this is what you have to take, and it's numbers that MLB created. It's not numbers that MLB and the union negotiated. And like I said, I mean, to tell a guy you're worth less, and here we are in a draft that everybody considers one of the best drafts in recent memory, and to tell a guy you're worth less than a comparable player 5 years ago, right, even though that was a lesser draft, is ludicrous. And so anyway, these guys will sign, but that's the reason they aren't signed now, is there's just a lot of bad will created. And the problem is, too, MLB, not only, you know, they recommend these bonuses, and I know a lot of our listeners know this, but we'll just walk through the process.
I think it's worthwhile to walk through it.
If I want to sign John Manuel, let's say I draft you in the third round.
First of all, you overdrafted me.
Well, you want to go to UNC really badly, and you want $1 million, and I believe in you, and I want to give you $1 million. I can't just, you know, teams wish it were so simple as we hammer out the bonus and we're done. And a lot of times these bonuses are agreed to when I draft you.
Right.
But I can't give it to you right away. So anyway, if I want to give you $1 million, I first have to go to MLB and say I want to give John $1 million. And then they basically make me jump through a bunch of hoops and explain why you're worth $1 million. And I can have all these arguments, scouting reports, this and that. And then MLB, without fail, I can only think of maybe one example I know of where they agreed with the team, and that's because they talked the Astros out of signing Drew Stubbs out of high school, which wound up hurting the Astros. But anyway, the MLB will say, well, no, our Major League Scouting Bureau reports say John's worth, you know, slot money. Don't do it. We don't like it. And then I say essentially, well, no, you know what? I still want to do it. I believe in John. I trust in my scouts. So then MLB will go to my owner or my GM or whoever they feel like they have connections with and lobby them not to do it. And eventually, hopefully, you know, if I get the support of my front office, they'll say, no, we're going to sign the guy with John for $1 million. But it's still more complicated because I am not allowed to offer you the $1 million formally, although people are obviously discussing money all the time.
Sure.
You know, before it gets to the end. I can't offer you that $1 million until MLB approves the offer. And granted, they can't do a whole lot to you. If you don't go through the process or I offer, you know, it leaks out that I've actually extended the offer formally before MLB signs off on allowing me to even make the offer, you know, they can fine you. They can try political influence. Like maybe they don't give me an all-star game I'm counting on.
Right.
You know, maybe if I'm a small revenue team, they withhold or delay discretionary funds that are sent my way. And I had somebody tell me this morning that this year MLB has actually – I don't even know how they could do this, but MLB has actually threatened to take away future draft picks from teams who don't go through the process. And so it's just a horrible, horrible process. It's not just a matter of
They're threatening to take away future draft picks?
I don't even know like the legality of that, if they could actually do that. But that's what somebody told me this morning when we were grousing about how stupid the whole process is and how it makes it much more difficult. And I was told that that MLB – I mean, again, I don't know if they really have the power to do that, like
that's
if
amazing.
That would stand up. Because if I were a team and they took my draft picks because they didn't like the fact that I extended an offer too early, I mean, a fine's one thing, but the draft picks are worth a lot more than what the fine would be. I mean, I think you'd have an issue there. So I don't know if that would stand up under scrutiny if they actually tried to do that, but – you know, it's not just a matter of scouting the player and determining what you think he's worth and reaching a deal. You basically have to have MLB not only try to talk you out of it, but MLB tells you when you're allowed to make the offer. And that's why teams are so skittish of stuff getting reported, because a lot of times we'll report something and perhaps MLB hasn't even given them the permission to formally extend the offer. But obviously, I mean, you know, and a lot of this year it's been a little bit tighter than most, because a lot of the first round picks still haven't been offered over slot. But in a lot of cases, there is behind the scenes discussion going on where I may be talking to the, you know, if I'm a team, I'm talking to the agent and we're negotiating, even though I may not formally have MLB's permission to extend those offers to the player. You still have to do some of that, because if you don't, there's no way you can sign everybody, you know, going into the final weekend. I mean, just look at the Blue Jays right now, have 4 picks in the first 2 rounds, and then their 3rd through 10th picks around the picks are all unsigned. There's, you know, I'm not accusing anybody of wrongdoing, but there, I find it hard to believe that the Blue Jays haven't, you know, entered into more serious negotiations with some of those picks, because there's no way they could get them all signed.
I agree. That's the Baseball America podcast with John and Jim. That does strain credulity, and I think the Blue Jays are smarter than that. Let's, Jim, so that's how we got where we are. Where we are is a ton of unsigned first-round picks. I'd like to run through the first round just real quick, hit on maybe any real trouble spots, and then we'll just maybe just briefly, division by division, go by each team so you can listen to your team and say, what is my team going to do draft signing-wise? You ready to roll on that?
I am.
Let's roll on that. In the first round, Jim, one thing that stands out to me is that since the draft deadline started, 2007, first year of the deadline, everybody signed in the first round. But the last 3 years since then, we've had at least 2 unsigned first-round picks every year. Now, some of those have been different cases, like Dylan Covey last year was not because necessarily the deadline, although that sure didn't help the Brewers make up for Dylan Covey, late diagnosis of diabetes. I don't think they were going to sign him anyway, but maybe he would have signed if they'd had that physical in June. Maybe Dylan Covey could have gotten his diabetes under control that summer and said, okay, I do have it under control. I actually do want to go ahead and sign and go out into pro ball. I mean, who knows? We'll never know. But the fact is that we had a long stretch in the 2000s where we didn't have that many unsigned first-round picks, and now the last 3 years we've had 8 unsigned first-round picks. I know you've said most of the summer you feel like every first-round pick is going to sign. Do you still feel that way now heading into the weekend?
I do, and you know, and again, I wouldn't say it's a lock. I wouldn't say, you know, it's 90% or, you know, definitely.
I knew you were going there.
I just think that in the end, that these guys are all going to get offered more money than most cases they can turn down. That said, as you pointed out, you know, you do get situations. You had the Aaron Crow situation 3 years ago where the Nationals and his advisors, the Hendricks brothers, you know, kind of the same thing, this delayed negotiation until the last second, and then it blew up, and he wound up not signing.
Or this year's first overall pick, Garrett Cole. Same thing happened 3 years ago when he came out of high school. I mean, the deadline did not help. The closer he got to school, the more comfortable he got with the idea of going to school.
Right, and that's what I say. You know, that happens too. I mean, I don't think that was acrimonious. I don't even think they really exchanged numbers at the end. But what happened is because Garrett Cole was going to get over – he probably had the best stuff in that draft, just like he has the best stuff in this draft, the best pure stuff.
He was the best high school pitcher in that draft. There was only one other high school pitcher even drafted in the first round, high school right-hander, I should say. It was Ethan Martin, and this guy's better than Ethan Martin. I mean, he was then, and he's better now.
And so, but with Cole, what happened was because he was going to get a big overslot bonus, he wasn't going to be able to sign until August 15th if he signed. And the Yankees do what a lot of teams do, which is, you know, hey, you know, we'll come back in August, we'll figure this out. You know, they don't put the full court pressure on because you can't sign the guy in June or July anyway. And by the time it was time to sit down and talk serious money, you know, he had gotten more excited about, you know, UCLA and had been – I mean, that's one of the reasons the deadline – I mean, some people tell you, and I do think some of the players will sweat the deadline because they have to wait so long and maybe sign a little quicker. But the flip side of that is, too, I think some of these high school kids, if the signing deadline was a lot closer to the draft and they had to make it – you know, and they're still fresh off being drafted and they're excited about being drafted. You know, I think a Garrett Cole, if you had a July 1st deadline in 2008, I think Garrett Cole's a Yankee, and he's probably in their big league rotation right now.
I agree.
You know, and then, you know, as you point out, you had 2 guys who had physical issues last year, and you had the Carsten Whitson negotiation where there was a dispute over, you know, what had been agreed to, you know, before the draft, what kind of parameters.
Correct.
And then in 2009, you had kind of an odd situation with Matt Perk where team agrees to pay him $6 million.
Right.
And they don't have $6 million. You know, MLB's controlling the finances and says, there's no way we're allowing you to pay $6 million.
Like I said, I mean, yeah, all these situations have been different. But the fact that if there's any complications, they're only going to be resolved. We have a very small window to resolve them. I think that has led to more unsigned first-round picks. So the first question is, who is the most – if anyone doesn't sign in the first round, who are the most likely guys to not sign? Would it be someone like Tyler Beede, 21st overall to the Blue Jays? I know that Jonathan Mayo, whom you worked with on the MLB Network broadcast of the draft, Jonathan reported there's some real complications with Tyler Beede. And he was always discussed as a tough sign. There have been various rumors about Tampa's first-round picks, Mikey Montauk and Taylor Guerrero, or Joe Ross, the Padres. Who's the least likely? If there's any first-rounder that's most unlikely to sign, if you had to pick one, whom would you pick?
Be really up in the air, you know, because it's, you know, Jonathan, who I respect a lot, you know, had a story last night, oh, Tyler Beede's pretty much going to Vanderbilt, it's over. And the funny thing about that was, right after the draft, you had some people reporting, oh, he's got a pre-draft deal already in place, which the Blue Jays angrily denied. So
I believe that he did have a pre-draft deal in place, but not with Toronto. I believe he had pre-draft deals. My information is he had pre-draft deals in place with one or two other clubs, but not the Blue Jays.
Right, but it was reported that the Blue Jays already had a deal with it. So anyway.
Right,
so
that was better.
Yeah, and so anyway, I made a couple calls, and I was told, you know, that isn't as – you know, it's just they're not close because, again, the team is not authorized to offer – you know, I don't know if they've offered slot. I don't think they've really offered more than slot as far as I can determine, and that's not going to get it done. But I don't think – you know, I think if they don't offer slot, yeah, he'll go to Vanderbilt. if I had to pick a guy – well, the thing is there's no obvious guy. I mean, there's guys who could be problem. I mean, you hear talk that Danny Holson – you know, is asking for $13 or $14 million, which I don't think he's going to get if that's true. And again, I mean, he's a college junior, hasn't been offered over slot. You know, and you have the possibility that something blows up. I mean, you have Taylor Youngman. The Brewers, you know, haven't made an over slot offer on their two college pitchers. And Taylor Youngman's represented by Hendrick Sports Management, which had Aaron Crow. And again, you know, if you know maybe Youngman has an expectation of a big league contract. You know, I don't know what he was looking for exactly going into the draft, and maybe that blows up a little bit. You know, Beede's potential, you know, you hear stories, Joe Ross, the Padres high school pitcher at 25, you know, has been offered, you know, over $2 million and balked at it. You know, and if that's the case, you know, how much higher are they going to go? You know, Blake Swihart, I think, might take $3 million to sign by the Red Sox, although I think they'll spend it, but that's still, you know, that's a lot of money. So you know, it wouldn't surprise me if there's a guy or two, you know, that there's bad blood or something, you know, maybe somebody, you know, has the Barrett Lauch, Dylan Covey situation like last year where something crops up in a physical at the last second. But, you know, I don't know who the obvious candidate is. Those are maybe, you know, some of the more likely ones, but I do think in the end, I haven't heard anything on any of these guys that makes me think that it's not going to happen to this point.
Okay, that's good to know. I'm with you. I think maybe there'll be one guy who doesn't sign, and it might be even a surprise. But
If we were sending over under, if we're Vegas and we're trying to split the money evenly,
yeah,
the over under probably should be 32. Is how many first round picks? 32 out of 33. It's just, you know, it would be tough to pinpoint which, you know, as of right now, nothing I don't think has blown up to the point where you're like, oh, you know, I don't think that guy's going to sign.
I'm not a gambler, but I would bet the over under would be 31 because the last 3 years, 8 guys haven't signed in the first round. Just using those numbers, I'd say you should expect, even though we don't know necessarily who it will be right now, I would say you should expect, I think it's fair to expect 2 guys to not sign. If I had to pick 2 guys who wouldn't sign, I don't have as much information as you on this, but it wouldn't shock me if it's one high school guy and one college guy. I think all these college guys should sign. And to me, Youngman and Matuk, because the Rays, you know, have a lot of picks, and it just seems like most of the time teams that have a bonanza like that, and they had an unprecedented bonanza, it's hard to sign all those guys. And I think that I don't think Matuk wants to go back to school, but it wouldn't shock me. And then the other college guy would be Youngman, like you said. I don't expect him to go back to Texas. But it is Texas. They have their own TV network this year. Maybe Taylor Youngman wants to do Longhorn Network sideline commentary for the football team. But one of the other things that you talked about, and on the high school side, it wouldn't shock me if one of those high school pitchers wound up in college. But I'm with you. I'm hoping actually that all 33 guys sign, and I like college baseball, so I kind of hope some of those guys wind up in school. Jim, one of the things that we've talked about off air the last week or so is just the bonuses and the money that these guys are going to get. And why don't you tell that? Well, you don't have to tell the details, but it sounds like the first we have Garrett Cole's the only guy signed in the first 9 selections.
No, Trevor Bauer.
Trevor Bauer, I'm sorry. Thank you, Trevor Bauer. Approximately how much money do we think those first 9 picks, those 8 other unsigned guys, from Javier Baez, Lindor, Archie Bradley, Anthony Rendon, Bubba Starling, Dylan Bundy, Danny Hulton, Garrett Cole, that's going to be around $50 million, isn't it, for those 8 other guys. Is that a conservative estimate? Am I a little low in saying $50 million?
Well, Bud Selig's probably choking if he's hearing you say that. It's for the 6 elite guys, Garrett Cole, Danny Holson, Dylan Bundy, Bubba Starling, Anthony Rendon, Archie Bradley, who are all in the top 7 along with Trevor Bauer. Last Monday when I did SBA, I kind of put in I'm angling to work in Vegas because I put an over-under on those 6 guys because I think they're all going to get big league deals or 2-sport deals where the bonus is spread over multiple years. I put the over-under on those 6 guys at $41.5 million, and that might be light. That might be light. And then Lindor and Baez at 8 and 9 I don't think are quite in the same class, and you're going to have kind of a tug-of-war between the player side is going to sit there and say, hey, the first 7 picks in this draft average about $6 or $7 million. We're not saying we're in their class, but we should get, say $4 million. They'll try to piggyback on that a little bit. I'd maybe say – if you add in Lindor and Baez, maybe I was a tick light. You might be talking at $47 million for those 8 top 10 picks who are unsigned right now. And on the backside of the first round, when you look in the 20s and you've got Tyler Beattie, Joe Ross, Blake Swihart, Robert Stevenson, I think all 4 of those guys could get bonuses that start with a 2. And Beattie and Swihart could get bonuses that start with a 3, depending on where it ends up. And you also have Alex Meyer lurking down there. And Alex Meyer is advised by the Boris Corporation. And Scott is very good at his job and very good at keeping score. And Alex Meyer turned down $2 million from the Red Sox out of high school. And if I'm setting over-unders, I'll bet you Scott's trying to get Alex Meyer signed for at least $2 million or $2.1 million. So you could have, 5-6 guys in the 20s who get $2 million bonuses.
That's a lot of money. It's the Baseball America podcast with John and Jim. Jim, let's talk about – let's go team by team. Let's start in the National League because everyone always asks from the American League East. Let's start in the National League East. It appears that the Braves are a team, but it's going to go alphabetical. It doesn't seem like the Braves have got anybody.
they've signed their first 19 players, so they are done, John. I think the only guy they might be in on a little bit would be Carlos Rodriguez, high school lefty from Honolulu, although I'm not sure that – I think he may wind up at Oregon State. But I think he would be their top priority of their unsigned guys. But, they don't go over slot. I think they went over slot for one guy. They gave Navarre Moore $400,000 in the 14th round the other day.
Right.
I don't know if they're going to get Carlos Rodriguez done.
Okay. It seems, the other reason I started the National League East is it seems like it's a little easier. The Marlins. It seems that the Marlins really they're weak, and the guys to watch for them seem like they're Jose Fernandez and Connor Barron, correct? I guess a little
yes.
bit. I guess maybe Tyler Palmer also in that factor.
Yeah, well, here's what's going on there. Tyler Palmer, we've heard – I believe he injured a hand in some kind of off-field incident. And I don't think he's going to sign.
Okay.
And I don't think he's necessarily going to wind up at Georgia either. I don't know the exact details of the injury, but I've heard there's an injury involved. So I'm not expecting Tyler Palmer to sign. Connor Barron, their third-round pick. Last information I had is they made him a very sizable offer, possibly even late first-round money. And I think he's still going to Southern Miss. So they may not sign Connor Barron. That leaves Jose Fernandez, the 14th overall pick. You've heard numbers with Jose Fernandez asking for numbers that begin with a 3 or 4. There was talk that, he'll go to Japan. We'll see on that one. But it looks to me like if I have to guess right now, I don't think they're necessarily signing their third or fourth round pick. So they actually have extra money for Jose Fernandez, although I don't know that Jose Fernandez really has the leverage to command a $3 million bonus. I think they get Jose Fernandez done, but that's, you know, we were talking about guys who might not sign. That's one, you know, we were talking about a team that doesn't go over slot very much at all.
Right.
A guy who's asking for a couple million over slot or a million and a half over slot, that's a potential red flag in terms of getting a deal done. But I think they will get him done in the end.
Anyone further down their list who could benefit from a Connor Barron not signing, like a Jared Grundy, somebody like that who's further down, they might go over slot for at the last minute?
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, I don't think they'll have a big ticket signing. You know, you've got Grundy, you've got Derek Varnador. You know, these aren't guys I think necessarily are going to get big money. So they might, you know, give $250,000 to another guy or two that they weren't planning on. You know, they have leftover money, but I don't think any of these guys is a guy I look at and say, oh, there's a $750,000 guy to throw money at if we're not going to sign some of our higher picks.
Just making sure. Speaking of a team that has not gone over slot, and this is one thing in the 5 years, Jim, I meant to talk about this earlier. We're going to talk about the Mets, but the 5 years of this bonus of the hard slotting and the deadline. The hard slotting has been almost 10 years, I guess maybe more than 10 years now. But the deadline been in play since 2007. You mentioned the Astros. That's a franchise that's seriously been damaged by towing the line. Their farm system as bad as any in the game has been for the last 3 years. The last 3 or 4 years, they've been the worst farm system in the game. I think you can directly trace it to the diminution of their Venezuelan program, loss of Andres Reynier. They were the pioneers of Venezuela, and they have not been nearly as productive in Latin America as they used to be. And B, their drafts. They've drafted terribly, and they sign a lot of players for slot. And it's gotten marginally better the last 3 years, but that's a whole other podcast. But the Mets are another organization that rarely goes over slot, Jim, and it has hurt, and it has hurt them a great deal. Didn't we have some chart that you were talking about yesterday about the teams that have spent the least over the last 5 years in this, the last four drafts since 2007?
Yeah, you know, if you look since the signing deadline came in 2007, you know, the average team has spent, you know, roughly $24 million on the four. You know, the average team spends about $6 million a year on the draft. You know, it's risen over the 4 years. The Mets, you know, the Mets who are in New York have a new ballpark that
have
was pretty much
network.
Given to them by the, you know, own network that's new. The Mets have spent a total of $18 million on the draft, which
total.
Is, you know, half of what the Washington Nationals have spent. You know, roughly half of what the Pittsburgh Pirates have spent. And, you know, again, you know, the draft, you get what you pay for. That said, this year, they've handed out some slightly, you know, $250,000 deals already. They're going to have to go, you know, well over slot, I believe, to sign Brandon Nimmo in the first round. I think they're prepared to do that. And I think they're going to get a couple later round guys, too. I think they're putting a big full court press on Philip Evans in the 15th round, high school infielder from California.
Yeah.
They've got a football player, Brad Marquez, who's going to play at Texas Tech, who can really fly. I think he's going to get a deal that allows him to play football at Texas Tech, but also, you know, ties him to the Mets, you know, from a baseball standpoint. So I think we're going to see him go over slot to get Brandon Nimmo signed at number 13, and I think they're going to get a couple guys late. You know, I think a back burner guy, maybe Mason Robbins in the 20th round, if they don't get some of those other guys done. I think he's in play maybe, but more as a alternative plan. And I do still think they're going to sign their third rounder, Logan Verrett, a Baylor. You know, and he's one of these college juniors who's they're trying to force feed him a slot that's 5 years old, and he's a guy who had aspirations of possibly going in the first round coming into the year, and so they just haven't worked out. I mean, I'm sure he'll sign. I'd be shocked if he went back to Baylor for senior year, but it's this atmosphere of, here, you got your college junior, so you got to take this slot that's less than what it was in 2006, and it's just not sitting well with guys. So I think we'll see him sign in the next couple of days.
Yeah, that's the Mets to me are one of the more interesting ones to watch. We'll see what Nimmo gets. I like Mason Robbins, and then the Philip Evans kid's interesting, and then like the kid going to Texas Tech, the football player, that's a fascinating situation. The Phillies, Jim, this is one of the organizations that's toward the bottom of that list of spending. Like a big draft for them was 2008 when they spent $6.7 million on their draft, and that was
and
a good draft
roughly,
for them.
And they've spent 18 over the last 4 years,
they've gotten more than what they've paid for. They have done a really nice job as an organization of bargain hunting internationally and doing when they go over slot for a guy, it's been guys like Jonathan Singleton and Jared Kozar, whom they traded for Hunter Pence. I mean, they've done a great job, I think, by any measure in the last 5 years in the draft.
They have, and what I was going to say is why their spending numbers a little misleading because they have not had a lot of early picks.
Correct.
Because of signing free agents.
And
what they have
good.
Done, they are probably as willing as any team to take the super raw athlete, the Pat Gillick type of player. And, you know, those guys have high upside. And, you know, if you're getting them, you know, like a Jonathan Singleton's not an athletic guy, but they got Jonathan Singleton for, you know, a few hundred thousand dollars in the eighth round. You know,
Juwan James was the first guy to go over slot in 2007, right? And it was barely over slot, but
yeah, you know, they're getting guys for $250,000-$300,000. So they're getting the guys they want at prices they value. They're 18, like I said, they're 18 million while low. It's not like they're pinching pennies. They haven't had the high picks. They've been picking low in the first round. I mean, shoot, you know, you look this year, Gerrit Cole, you know, I'd put his over-under, you know, on a big league deal at around $7.5 million. If you're picking at the end of the first round, like the Phillies, you know, are a lot of years, and this year they had a sandwich pick. But if you're picking at the end of the first round, it's $1 million player. So there's $6 million, you know, $6 million difference on our little spending chart. So,
but how are Larry Green and Roman Quinn not signed yet? That surprises me. I thought Larry Green would have been a guy who signed for slot or close to it and goes out early, because those are the kind of guys, Southern kids, who've played, but they're also two-sport guys, a little bit raw, both small-town guys. They needed to be in the GCL this year, I think. That seems like a situation that it surprises me that neither of those guys had signed yet.
Yeah, you know, and they're classic Phillies guys. You know, Larry Green
Absolutely.
Has got, you know, unbelievable. You know, he's got one huge tool, raw power. Roman Quinn, you know, might be the fastest, you know, top prospect in the entire draft. And you know, again, I think it goes back to you have these slots that are just not realistic, and people know they're not realistic. They're 5 years old, and they're you know, 40% below reality, and I think
right.
that's just what's holding it up. And you have, again, MLB telling teams, and I don't know, you know, maybe they've offered these two guys more than slot, but there's so many guys who have been offered slot and slot only till right now, and are being forced to wait. So I think, but I haven't heard any indication that those guys aren't going to sign.
Okay.
I would anticipate they'll both get done, and I wouldn't think they'd be huge, huge over slot guys either. You know, I don't think you're spending $2 million on Larry Green or Roman Quinn. So I would anticipate they'll get those guys done and probably get their fifth rounder, the high school infielder from California, Mitch Walding.
Right.
I think there's a good chance they get him done too.
Okay. Anybody else? Like Riley Moore, I don't know is he a name that might be an over slot guy? He's on like an interesting high school catching prospect that they drafted.
Yeah,
wonder
you know,
that
it's
name would come up.
Yeah, you know, I haven't heard much on whether they're going to make a play for him. I don't know. He's committed to Arizona. You know, possible. He's one of our top, you know, top 200 prospects. You know, they kind of end up operate a little more quietly. You know, they always seem to sign a guy like that. You know, late. You know, like a Brody Colvin. You know, got signed. You know, on the day of the deadline while he's at orientation at LSU. So
right.
they you know, Jared Kozar got signed, you know, hours before the deadline after an American Legion game. You know, they probably have knowing the Phillies, they probably have somebody, you know, lower in the draft who's going to get, you know, a few $100,000 and wind up being a pretty good player a couple of years from now.
The most interesting team in the National League East in terms of their draft is the Nationals. They picked the highest, and they picked three times in the first 34 picks. They picked three Boris Corporation clients with those three picks, correct? Rendon, Meyer, and Brian Goodwin?
Yeah, you know, that's going to be an interesting one.
And they have Matt Perk, and they have their fourth-rounder, Kylan Turnbull's unsigned. And when you look down, they have some other guys who are, you know, interesting insurance cases, guys like Houghton Buchanan and Josh Laxer, who were two of the best high school pitchers in the state of Mississippi. Kind of interesting guys like a Calvin Drummond or a Josh Tobias or Derek Bleeker even. Brett Moon, they have interesting guys throughout their entire draft list, Jim. But let's start at the top. We expect Rendon, Meyer, and Goodwin to sign, correct?
Yes. And again, I don't know why I'm Mr. Over-Under today. I would put the over-under on those three guys combined. I'm going to go $9 million there for you, John. Are you going over or under $9 million?
I'm going over.
And I think you might be right.
I mean, I don't mean this in any other way except for Mike Rizzo has dealt with the Boris Corporation for a long time. And whether it's Stephen Drew or Max Scherzer or whoever, I'm sure there are others, those guys got paid. And Alex Meyer, there's no way he's signing for anything less than $2 million. Rendon, I think, expects to be treated like the number one college hitter in this draft. And so that's what did Dustin Ackley get 2 years ago? $6 million? What did Evan Longoria?
Seven and a half.
What did Evan Longoria get in 2006?
Well, he got more of a straight bonus.
Okay, well, he's going to get double.
Got a $6 million bonus and a $7.5 million contract.
Yeah, he's going to get closer to Ackley. And then and then Brian Goodwin. I mean, Brian Goodwin actually has leverage. You know, he could go to South Carolina next year, two-time defending national champions, and he could go there and replace Jackie Bradley Jr. and be right back in the draft next year. Brian Goodwin has leverage, so he's going to get paid, I think. So I think they're going to spend, and I don't expect Matt Perk to get signed myself. So I think the Nationals are going to load up on those first three picks, and I'm going to go over your $9 million.
Okay, maybe I should have set that at 10. And I think you're right on Perk. I just think, you know, we've gone over the Matt Perk story before. You know, guy got offered $6 million by the Rangers, which MLB wouldn't approve because the team was in a financial mess at the time. Goes to TCU, has a great freshman year, takes him to Omaha. Comes out this year, you know, right behind Cole and Rendon on our preseason draft list, and had shoulder issues. Some guys don't like the slinging delivery. You know, didn't build up his arm strength because he didn't pitch a lot in the offseason, and his stuff was down. And so he goes in the third round. And I just think with Matt, I just think he's such a competitive kid that I don't think he's going to sign for less than the $6 million. I think it would have to be very close to the $6 million he got offered out of high school. And I'm not saying that's a realistic expectation to get to six.
Correct.
But I just think that you're talking to people who know Matt Perk, that his attitude, he's so competitive, will be, you know what? You know, I'm worth six. I think his dad has very strong opinions as to what Matt's worth. And I think they feel that's his true worth. And if he doesn't get it, you know, he's a draft-eligible sophomore. He's not a junior. Fine, I'll go back to school. I'll be 100% physically next year, and I'll go 1-1 in next year's draft and get my six. You know, which is, I mean, that's a lot that has to happen to make that go right. But in a way, I kind of admire the competitive spirit. I think the Nationals, to be honest, I think they legitimately drafted him with the intention of signing him. I don't think this is a, hey, we're trying to leverage the guys ahead of him, or we're trying to leverage Matt. I think that, you know, I don't know what they're going to wind up offering him. I wouldn't be surprised if they offered him, you know, two something. You know, it's become, he hasn't pitched this summer. He's just worked out, and they've seen his workouts. But I just don't think he's shown enough to get what he wants this year, and I don't think he's the type of guy who's going to settle for less.
Completely agree. I think you're. I mean, hey, all that said, he still could sign. But if I'm Matt Perk and I'm looking at all these reports out of the Cape Cod League and summer college leagues and seeing how the 2012 draft class doesn't look as strong as the 2011, I'd bet on me. I would bet on Matt Perk.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you mentioned Haughton Buchanan and Josh Laxer, a couple of Mississippi pitchers drafted in the 19th and 20th round. To me, I think, yeah, and the Nationals have done this in the past couple of years when they've drafted guys like Strasburg and Brian Harper. I think those guys are backup plans. If something falls through with one of these guys, you know, in the, you know, good Rendon, Meyer, or Goodwin, then they'll use that money to go get those guys. You know, when they didn't sign Aaron Crow a few years ago, they spent on J.P. Ramirez. And,
exactly.
You know, the other guy you asked about was Kylan Turnbull in the fourth round. He's another one of these guys that I think the Nationals have offered slot, and it's like you can have slot or you can have slot. And right now, he's a junior college sophomore who's committed to Oregon, and I don't think he's going to sign for slot. So that just comes down to, you know, how much they're willing to raise their offer between now and Monday night.
I just, you know, the other factor there, a small factor, is a lot of these college commitments are made with the assistant coach or the recruiting coordinator. And that at Oregon was Andrew Checkitz when Kylan Turnbull made that, and that is no longer Andrew Checkitz. He's no longer with the Ducks. He's the head coach at UC Riverside, if memory serves, not Riverside, Santa Barbara. So I just wonder if that will factor in. I'm sure the Nationals know that, and maybe that's why he's being offered slot or slot. Just also wanted to note, this was a huge year in the draft in Mississippi, and all those top guys in Mississippi out of the high schools there, it was a great year for high school baseball in Mississippi. And Connor Barron's unsigned. Brandon Woodruff's unsigned. Senquez Golson's unsigned. The only guy who signed.
I don't think any of those guys are necessarily going to sign either. I think all three of those guys are likely to go to college.
Houghton Buchanan's unsigned. Josh Laxer, Mason Robbins. All those guys may not sign. It is crazy. Word got out in the state of Mississippi. Let's go real quick to the National League Central, Jim. A lot of rumors with the Chicago Cubs because the Cubs have money. But they've got they finally announced Trevor Gretzky, I guess, huh?
Yeah, you know, it's weird. It's, you know, we've been talking about that one, you know, for about a month. You know, there was a story, Bob Elliott in the Toronto paper talked to Tony Gwynn. Trevor Gretzky was going to, you know, Wayne's son, obviously, was going to San Diego State. And Tony Gwynn told Bob Elliott, it seems like it was about 3 years ago, but I think it was more like 3 weeks ago, that Trevor Gretzky told them he was signing. And then MLB.com, which reports all the transactions, actually showed Trevor Gretzky signing on July 22nd. Well, the only thing was, the weird thing about that was, he never showed. MLB sends out a spreadsheet to teams every day during the week that shows what every bonus is in the first 10 rounds, and they highlight the new signings. Trevor Gretzky never showed up on that spreadsheet until yesterday, like 3 weeks later. And similarly, MLB has this internal contract system that the teams can all access to look up bonus information or major league contract information. And Trevor Gretzky never wound his way into that. So we've been wondering for 3 weeks, you know, how much money did he get that they are keeping this, you know, so top secret? And it was $375. So I'm not sure what all the secretive nature of hiding his $375,000 bonus was, but we now know that Trevor Gretzky got signed for $375,000. And I think actually, John, that may be my most retweeted tweet ever. When I tweeted last night that he signed for $375,000, I think that's been retweeted like 75 times. And it's not just Cubs fans. And you know, maybe I got a boost because Keith Olbermann retweeted it, so I got his followers. But it's like I've gotten a trillion retweets from Trevor Gretzky's bonus.
You mean you got more on that than on Eric Haas? I can't believe that.
I did. Well, Eric Haas is just fresh this morning. You know, and the funny thing about Gretzky, well, again, teams like who they like. You know, we kind of build a consensus. You know, we're not scouts. We talked to a bunch of people, kind of build a consensus. Our reports on Trevor Gretzky were, you know, interesting. You know, 6'4", lean body, power potential, but you know, kind of a really work in progress. Needs to go to school. I don't think we saw him as anywhere really near the same kind of player the Cubs saw him as.
Yeah, pretty interesting. Now they have unsigned first-rounder Javier Baez, committed to Jacksonville. That's a weird one. I don't think any of us – do you expect him to go to school? Any chance he's going to go to school?
I don't think there's any chance. I mean, here's the interesting about that one. I mean, I like Javier Baez a lot. Best bat speed in the draft. Very intriguing. You know, if you want to do a real superficial comparison, you know, Florida high school shortstop with great bat speed. You know, you can throw Gary Sheffield out there. I'm not saying he's Gary Sheffield. But, I mean, really exciting bat. This guy's very interesting. That said – I don't think he was going any higher than number 9 in the draft.
Right.
You know, it's possible. There may have been teams. This happens all the time. You know, you're not supposed to talk money. You know, the players aren't supposed to talk money for NCAA rules. Teams aren't supposed to talk money with players before the draft. You know, yeah, right. That never happens.
Right.
It's possible somebody behind the Cubs was, you know, making some promises to Javier Baez if he got to him. But that's almost a deal that surprised me that the Cubs, when they took him, didn't know, okay, this is what it's going to cost. But
right.
My understanding on that one is the Cubs have a bunch of unsigned players, and that you know, you look at the major league team, you look at some of the Cubs draft signings. When the Cubs want a guy, they pay for him. You know, the money doesn't seem to be an object, and I think that's more a situation where Baez has been told you're going to get taken care of. It's just going to have to happen, you know, in the last couple of days before the.
That's just one where I, you know, again from the college baseball standpoint,
so I don't think they're.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say I think you know he'll get done. It's just. You know, I don't think a whole lot has been done on it yet.
I sure would love to see. I would love to see him with Dan Gilbranson and
Adam Brett Walker.
That would be a really exciting team. Yeah, imagine that those three hitters in the Atlantic Sun, even with the BB Corps bats. Dan Vogelbaum, their second rounder, Vogelbach, the big first baseman. We think he's a done deal. Correct.
Yeah, I mean, it's
– I'm not going
to
give away the number.
It's been an open secret in the industry that he had a big number he was asking for, mid-first-round money, going into the draft. And I think everybody in baseball believes that the Cubs agreed to pay him that number very early on in the process. So he's going to sign. It's just – you know, my guess is, given the nature of how much money he's going to get, you know, it won't be officially the curtain won't be pulled back on that one until sometime Monday afternoon or evening.
I guess the big questions for the Cubs seem to be Sean Dunstan Jr., whom you've tweeted with, your Twitter buddy, Dylan Maples in the 14th round, who I'm interested in because he's committed to play locally here in North Carolina. He's a North Carolina high school kid. And also has a football scholarship to North Carolina, which why anyone would want to go play football there right now, I don't know. What are you hearing on those high school guys with the Cubs?
I think they could go either way. Early in the summer, I thought Dunston was more of a done deal than I think apparently he is. I think that could go either way. You know, I mean, he's in a great situation. I mean, obviously, you know, his father made a lot of money playing Major League Baseball. So it's not like the family needs the money. And he's either going to get a sizable bonus to go play for the team that drafted his dad, number one overall in 1982, or he's going to go to Vanderbilt. And, you know, to me, that's a win-win situation. I think Dylan Maples is kind of the same thing. Dylan Maples is either going to get a huge bonus or he's going to go to UNC for 3 years. You know, again, I think some of that comes down to what the Cubs do and, you know, exactly how much Javier Baez costs them. They're going to get Tony Zicton in the fourth round. That's another college junior, you know, who right. you have to go slow on. Taylor Dugas, I've heard
Dugas.
More.
Come Dugas, on, man. Sorry. Dugas.
Seinfeld reference, prognosis negative on that one. I think Daniel Lockhart probably signs. Keith Lockhart's son, the ex-big leaguer. I think with Dunston and Maples, it could be, you know, just, you know, that you know, I don't think either one of those guys is going to be real cheap. You know, I don't know the numbers involved. It might be, they might be seven-figure bonus guys to sign them. And it just comes down to a matter of how much money they have left at that point. And like we were talking about with Garrett Cole, you know, Sean Dunston's at Vanderbilt right now. You know, he may be a little bit more tied to Vanderbilt than he would have been if the signing deadline was July 15th and you had to make a decision then. So we'll see. I'd be really surprised if the Cubs signed both of them.
Okay.
They may get one of them, but I just think both those guys could go either way.
Okay. The Reds, really, unless they go crazy on Amir Garrett, the St. John's basketball recruit and a personal cheese ball of mine, so their really decision this weekend is Robert Stevenson. And logically, Robert Stevenson seems fairly tied in to the high school pitcher drafted two spots ahead of him in Joe Ross with the Padres. So are the Reds even really 100% in control of that negotiation, considering that Stevenson's number might, just logically, will probably depend a lot on what the other California high school pitcher taking two spots ahead of him gets?
Yes and no, because it's like, you know, this isn't arbitration. That's why I always think MLB sweats this stuff too much about, oh, one deal is going to affect another. I mean,
good point.
It may affect what guys ask for.
Good point.
But, you know, Joe
it's
Ross, you know, we're here and he's getting offered $2.5 million. If I'm representing Robert Stevenson, I'd love to tie myself to Joe Ross if Joe Ross is getting offered $2.5 million. And I think they're comparable. The flip side is, what if Joe Ross was signing for slot? Well, then if I'm Robert Stevenson, I don't necessarily want to tie myself to Joe Ross as much. And so if Joe Ross gets, you know, a number that begins with a two, you know, I'm going to raise my hand for Robert Stevenson and say, we'd like that also. And if I'm the Reds, I'm saying, well, wait a minute, we didn't sign Joe Ross. So, but again, all that said, I think he's going to sign. I'm sure, you know, the high school players have extra leverage because they can go to school. I would suspect he'll get over slot. We'll see what the number is. It wouldn't surprise me at all if the number began with a two. You know, even though the Reds aren't exactly the most liberal of spenders, but we'll see on that one. And you're right. I don't think Amir Garrett is a guy who's going to sign. I think he's just going to be basketball only at St. John's. And I don't think they have another guy they're going to throw a lot of money at in the next few days.
The Houston Astros, Jim, maybe they need the help a little bit less now than they used to before they traded their team for a bunch of prospects. But as we've said earlier, an organization that needs the help in their minor league system and some – I wouldn't say acrimonious, but you had the George Springer, your first rounder, his dalliance with the Atlantic League. You've got Jack Armstrong Jr. at three. What are the chances they sign both those guys? You expect both those guys to sign?
I expect Springer to sign. I mean, he created this big hullabaloo when he, you know, oh, George and his dad are talking to the Long Island Ducks, which had absolutely no bearing on his negotiations.
Right.
I mean, all that's telling me is he doesn't plan on going back to Connecticut for his senior year.
Right.
It does, you know, he could have signed with Long Island Ducks, and the deadline would still apply. He's going to sign. I think they were looking for huge money, and I don't think he's going to get crazy money. You know, I mean, he was a guy we had. I want to say John ranked fourth behind Cole, you know, Rendon, Cole, Perk at the top of our draft board going into the year, and you know, he didn't quite go in that tier of the draft. He's going to sign. I'm sure it'll be over slot. I don't know what's going on with Jack Armstrong, to be honest with you. I don't have a read on that. You know, Houston's got a new owner coming in, so you don't know how aggressive he's going to be about going over slot. I don't think they've gone over slot for a guy yet. They will for Springer. Armstrong's a guy who at times looks like a first-round pick. He's had injury issues. He didn't pitch a lot at Vanderbilt this spring. You know, on him, I think it comes down to what he's asking for. To me, he went 99th overall in the draft.
it's Pry Bauer where Jack Armstrong should have gone, and he really didn't pitch that much this year either.
Yeah, I'd say you're giving him too much credit. I think that's I thought that.
I mean,
was
he's been very good in the Cape at times, but yeah. So anyway, I mean, it wasn't like he fell in the draft. I mean, that's about where he
right.
deserved to go.
Right.
And while I'd say okay, he's slottable, you know, at 99, you know, and the slot at 99 is $335,700. Okay, that slot's artificially low. We've talked about that. The slot, you know, realistic should be more like 450. I don't know whether Jack Armstrong would sign for 450 or not, and I can't imagine the Astros giving him 750 or a million. I just, if I had to guess, and I'm just guessing on Jack Armstrong, I'd say he might be one of the third rounders who doesn't sign.
I think you're. I think that's accurate. I think that's fair. I think there's a good chance he does not sign. Milwaukee. We've already talked a little bit about Taylor Youngman and Jed Bradley. It seems like those are that's it for them. I mean, they've got a couple other high school guys they could maybe sign. They're in the middle teens. Carlos Rodon, a left-hander here locally out of Raleigh. Chris McFarland, the kid that's a little bit of an interesting story. You know, what's going on in your mind with the Brewers? Should Brewers fans worry that they're going to maybe not? And I guess the other question is Trent Boras really one of their fallback guys there in the 22nd round?
No, I don't think I'd be a little surprised. I know it was. I'd be a little surprised if Scott let his son sign for.
For
slot. Yeah, $150,000 in the 30th round rather than go to college. No, I think they'll get Youngman and Bradley done. And, they just went over slot recently to get their second rounder, Jorge Lopez, and their fifth rounder, Michael Reed. And, they might go for Rodon or McFarland or maybe a Mario Amaral. But, I think those are more fallback guys. You know, maybe they sign one of those guys. But I think they'll eventually get Youngman and Bradley done. And one other name I was going to throw out real quick for Houston.
Yeah.
14th rounder, Gandy Stubblefield's a real interesting, projectable Texas high school pitcher who's had a good summer. I think he's going to be very tough to sign away from Texas A&M. But keep an eye on him. You know, he might be a guy, if for some reason stuff broke down with George Springer, that they might throw money at Gandy Stubblefield. And maybe they'll do it anyway. If they don't sign, they'll use some of Jack Armstrong's money. Who knows?
That's a good name to throw out there. The Pirates, Jim, picked first overall. I think we all expect Garrett Cole to get done. So they have some other guys down the line who might be backup type guys. They hit Alabama hard with Clay Holmes and Joel Bennett. Some other interesting names in their draft list. The Aaron Brown kid who's had a great summer in the California Collegiate League. But it seems like all you've been asked about with them is the $11 million, the $10 million question with Josh Bell, their second round pick. What's your take on Josh Bell real quick? I guess if you want to touch on Cole, but it seems like Josh Bell's the guy that all the Pirates fans are really interested in.
Yeah, Cole's going to sign. He's going to get a big league deal, and that it's – I might be light on my over-under. I think it'll be around $7.5 million. You know, they may be shooting for closer to 10. He's going to sign. I just don't think – I get asked a question, like you said, all the time. I don't think Josh Bell's signable. I've had guys telling me they don't think he's signable if you offered him $15 or $20 million. His mom's a college professor at Texas Arlington. She wants him to go to Texas. I believe the letter that they wrote to teams saying he did not intend to sign was sincere. It is interesting that he does have the Boras Corporation as an advisor if you have no intention of signing. But, I'm sure they're going to – I love the pick by the Pirates because, to me, Josh Bell, you could argue that he is the best offensive ceiling of anybody in the draft. You know, he's in that discussion. He should have gone in the middle of the first round based on talent. I love taking him at 61, and if you don't sign him, the worst thing that happens is you get the 62nd pick in next year's draft. So I love that gamble. They did it – Pirates did it last year with Stetson Alley and signed him. Did a couple years ago with Tanner Shepherds, and it didn't pay off in that case because he wasn't healthy enough to sign at the end of the summer. But I like that strategy. This is a team making good use of the new compensation rules. You take a shot at a great player who shouldn't be there, and if you don't get him, you don't get him. I don't think they're going to get him. The other complicating factor with this, too, is, I mean, let's say he'd signed for $10 million. You know, my oldest son, AJ, and I always talk about how much I would let him sign for because I believe in going to college if AJ was a big draft prospect. And, like, I'm always telling him, look,
he got his J-bands, Jim, so you never know.
Yeah, but he's been lazy. He needs to start using his long – get on the long toss regimen. But anyway, AJ and I, to digress here for a second, we talk about this. And I tell him, he's like, would you let me sign for $2 million? And I'm like, I've got – AJ's my oldest of four kids who are going to start going to college soon. And I'm explaining to him, $2 million is not like you never work another day in your life. I don't think $2 million, sets you for life. I wouldn't necessarily say $2 million okay, we're definitely in. So AJ's going to be unsignable. Everybody can know that now. But it's like five is kind of the number. I was kind of, we kind of like, you know, well, five. $5 million, it'd be hard for me to tell you to turn down. So anyway,
I think that's awesome that you guys have a number for AJ.
Well, we talk about signing Bill. Well, yeah, I mean, it would help if he was on the high school team to start with. But anyway, getting back to Josh Bell. So let's say I'll just – and I have no idea what his – there's got to be a number he would sign for. Everybody has a number. Let's say Josh Bell's number is $10 million.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I've had people tell me they don't think he'd sign for 10. If Josh Bell's number is $10 million – here's the problem. One, I don't think the Pirates are going to offer him $10 million. That would amaze me. I love Josh Bell, but I would. That would amaze me. It would probably kill Bud Selig. Bud Selig would probably die if that deal got announced.
Choke on his hot dog.
But two, when he's at the custard stand. Two, Josh Bell has the same agent as Gerrit Cole. And there is no way Scott Boras is going to let Josh Bell – in the second round, get more money than the number one overall pick in the draft. So if you're going to pay Josh Bell $10 million, and this is just all speculative,
right?
You're going to have to give Gerrit Cole like 12.5. And the Pirates have been as aggressive as anybody since Frank Coonley's been there in the draft. You know, and the great irony of that, of course, is Frank Coonley's former job with MLB was to administer the draft program and tell teams why they were crazy for going over slot, which he obviously – his tune has changed now that he's with the small revenue Pirates. But anyway – you know, again, this is all speculative. I just can't see any way they get both. I don't think they can give Josh Bell a number high enough to sign without having to give Gerrit Cole more than that. And I really don't think the Pirates, as aggressive as they've been, are going to go to something like $20 or $22 million to sign the top two picks in their draft.
That's what I was about to say. That would be amazing if Frank Coonley is the executive who oversees a team that gives that spends approximately $25 million on a draft class.
We'd probably see, you know, MLB would like get an assassin on retainer and start taking people out. You know, so anyway, aside from Josh Bell, I think what the Pirates are going to do, I don't think they're going to sign Josh Bell. I think they're going to treat Clay Holmes, who you mentioned, in the ninth round, as their second round pick. And I think Clay Holmes is going to get a sizable bonus, and he'll sign before the deadline on Monday.
Okay. Wrapping up the NL Central, this podcast is getting longer than last year's, but that's okay. Charlie Tilson and the Cardinals, Jim. Charlie Tilson's the highest unsigned pick with the Cardinals. He's a Chicagolander. He's a guy you actually went out to go see this year. You had your parka on, and you went out to go check him out. First of all, how would AJ pitch Charlie Tilson? And two, is he going to sign? And is there anybody else the Cardinals might sign here late at the deadline?
I think AJ, who goes to Charlie's high school, would go after him with a high fastball. Try to go after him with a high fastball and then maybe set him up for a slider. But,
all right.
You know, he's pretty much the only guy left for the Cardinals at this point. I think he's going to sign. I think the final issue is going to be, you know, he was their second round pick. They gave Colton Wong $1.3 million as the 22nd overall pick in the first round. And I think you may have a little, you know, a lot of teams are very cognizant of what they pay their first rounder and try not to pay somebody more than him. So I think, you know, I think he's going to come in around Colton Wong's bonus. It's just a matter, does he get a little bit more, a little bit less? But I think Charlie Tilson is going to wind up signing. Again, you know, if he gets that kind of bonus, we probably won't have it officially until Monday night. And I don't think there's anybody else that they're really, you know, hot after. You know, if they didn't sign Charlie Tilson, maybe they'd give money to like a Brett Graves in the 26th round or an Aramis Garcia in the 20th round. You know, one of those type of deals, but it wouldn't be the, you know, they'd have a little money burning a hole in their pocket.
Gotcha. It's the Baseball America podcast with John Ejim. Diamondbacks, Jim, the only team in the first nine picks that's got a first rounder signed with Trevor Bauer, but they still have an unsigned player. And Archie Bradley, who judging by his Twitter is very bored with not being signed. You got Andrew Chafin. They got a lot of unsigned
picks. This is such a stupid process.
Yes, it's a horrible process. I mean, nobody in the game is going to tell you it's a good process.
They did sign Anthony Mayo yesterday for $625, but you know they have a bunch of question marks here, and it'll be. You know, I think they're going to aggressively go after. They're going to sign Archie Bradley. In my mind, he's a better prospect than Zach Lee, who was another high school right-hander / college quarterback prospect. Last year got $5.25 million from the Dodgers. I like Zach Lee. Archie Bradley is a better prospect.
That's a great comparison. You know, that's a tremendous comparison.
I may be
comparison.
Low on these guys. So to me, if Zach Lee's worth $5.25, and again, this is an arbitration, Archie Bradley's worth at least $6 million. I mean, Archie Bradley, who knows what Archie Bradley will get? You know, that'll be interesting because Trevor Bauer got a big league deal with $4.45 million in guarantees, but a very good chance to earn $7 million. My guess is they'll try to bring Archie definitely in under $7 million. If I had to guess on Archie Bradley, I'd guess $6 to $6.5 million on him.
I think that's a good guess. I like that. That makes a lot of sense. Somewhere between Trevor Bauer and Zach Lee. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. All right. So I think that's what we're going on. And with our other guys, you know, I've talked to Dimebacks. They're going to be aggressive going after players, but I don't think they've made a lot of progress. You know, Andrew Chafin's interesting in the sandwich round because he's a draft eligible sophomore because he missed a year with Tommy John surgery. And I like Andrew Chafin a lot. You know, he had a very good year, tired a little bit toward the end because he was coming back from Tommy John. And he was pretty much money for the first two-thirds of the season, going 7-8 innings every Friday, you know, giving up about one run. And while he did go 43rd overall, and that's obviously a very lofty draft position, at the same time, Andrew Chafin could come back next year as a junior and have a lot of leverage. And, I mean, John, do you think it's – I mean, I don't know what will happen with him. I think he could go either way. I don't think it's impossible that Andrew Chafin could go in the top 15 picks next year if he comes back fully healthy.
I completely agree. And then it's also very possible that a guy with his delivery and the injuries he's already had in his past could go to this northern school in the MAC. And if you have any slip-up, even if you just have one or two bad starts in the MAC, that'll be magnified. If you have any physical setbacks, didn't he have a physical setback this year?
He got a tired arm because he made like 10 consecutive starts.
So I agree completely with you. He has the upside where he could go in the first 10 or 15 picks next year. It's just risky for him. And I wouldn't fault him for betting on himself, but boy, that's a big risk. It's a bigger risk for him, I think, than it is for Matt Perk.
Right. And with him, I mean, I think he'll sign because, again, when you take a guy that high in the draft, like we're just talking about Charlie Tilson, you know, who had a big price tag too. When you take a guy in the top couple rounds, the team is usually prepared to pay him. You know, like we're talking about all these first round picks, the eight guys who haven't signed in the last few years, about half of those guys weren't even money decisions. It was goofy stuff. So usually when you take a guy at the top of the draft, you're prepared to pay him. So my guess is he'll sign, although it wouldn't shock me if he went back. You know, then they got a bunch of guys in the, you know, 5 through 10. I don't think they're real close with Michael Perez right now, a high school catcher from Puerto Rico.
Right.
Matt Price from South Carolina. He's another draft-eligible sophomore, right, John?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And he's going to be a very tough sign. Because there's a chance that Matt Price, as good as he's been as a closer in college, and he's been outrageously good, to me, he's like the Mariano Rivera of college baseball. He could start for them next year. They've talked for the last 2 years about Matt Price being in the rotation at South Carolina, and it would not shock me if he went in the rotation next year, and that's their selling point. A, Ray Tanner holds on to his players in the draft very well. B, Matt Price, they could be telling Matt Price, we're going to make you our Friday night guy. We'll put Forrest Kumas in the bullpen, and he could pitch himself into the first three rounds.
You're right, and I was just going to say, to make the same point about Ray Tanner, guys love to play for Ray Tanner. I think there's a good chance Matt Price goes back to South Carolina.
I think so, too.
You know, and Ben Roberts is kind of the Montana version of Wyoming's Brandon Nimmo. I don't think that one's super close yet. You know, we'll see on that one. You know, he's supposed to go to Washington State. And then Kyle Winkler, you know, there were reports a couple of days ago he'd agreed to terms pending a physical, and he had some issues at the end of the season, had a stress fracture in his arm. And, well, that physical was supposed to be a couple of days ago, and we still haven't heard that he's signed yet. So I don't know. You know, he's supposed to sign, but I'm not sure what the holdup is on that one right now. I guess we'll find out about that, you know, fairly soon, I would think. And so those are their main guys. You know, again, I think, you know, they'll definitely get Bradley and Chafin done. I think they're going to try to be aggressive. I don't know if they have a late-round guy that they're really going to go after big if they don't sign one of the top guys. You know, maybe a Michael Cedaroth in the 41st round. But I think Cedaroth is probably their best late-round pick, but I think he's headed for school.
The Baseball America podcast with John and Jim. Let's wrap up the National League, and then we'll do a two-parter, Jim, because we've gone long. We'll do a two-parter with the American League as a separate podcast. The Rockies, I can't imagine that Tyler Anderson and Peter O'Brien or Ross Stripling. Ross Stripling says he's going back to school, right? But I can't imagine those first two guys, Anderson and O'Brien, are going to be difficult signs. Is there anybody they've got lying out there in the weeds they might go high on? I guess, and have you heard anything on the status of Preston Tucker there in the 16th round for them?
Yeah, you know, I mean, Anderson is one of these, you know, the second or third tier college pitchers in the first round, waiting to see what guys sign for, been offered slot. Peter O'Brien, college junior, third round, my guess is he's been offered slot. And those guys will eventually sign. I think Stripling's probably headed back to Texas A&M at this point. I was talking to somebody about Tucker. I think Tucker goes back to Florida.
That's crazy to me, Jim. That is just crazy. First of all, how does Florida have the scholarship money? Because their recruiting classes every year are awesome. Second of all, this guy can play. I Preston Tucker, I've never been as high on him as Aaron Fitt was. I know he had a bad cape, but that guy's got raw power. He's got what you look for. You're looking for a carrying tool. He has it. Nobody hit a ball as far as he did at the College World Series this year. He was a man in the NCAA postseason for Florida. He was the best hitter in their lineup. That postseason for him turned me on Preston Tucker. I like to see players who are at their best at the most important time of year. And I'm surprised that he would go back to school. What has he got? What can he possibly prove at Florida next year?
I don't know what more he can prove, and I was going to say the same things you did. Had a terrible cape last year, which hurt him in the eyes of the big scouting brass. Had a slow start, and then he was so good in the postseason this year. Problem, I think, and this is why he lasts till the 16th round, is there's mixed opinions on him, and he's looking for sandwich round money.
I think
he's don't know.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just saying, I just don't know if the Rockies are going to give it to him. That's what the problem is. I think it's going to take at least bottom of the sandwich round money, $600,000 plus to sign him. And I'm not sure they're going to give it to him.
Of players in the SEC finish with a .545 slugging percentage, and he produced this year. And he walks as much as he strikes out. I've come around on Preston Tucker, not as much as Aaron Fitt, but I know Aaron Fitt will be shocked when he listens to this podcast, which I'm sure he'll do during his sister's wedding this weekend. But I bet you he'll be surprised at how much I've warmed on Preston Tucker. But he was pretty impressive. I just saw him take a great BP before the first game in Omaha and then take that into the games, and I was impressed at how locked in that guy was. The Dodgers,
he's a guy.
Go ahead.
We got to mention with Preston Tucker, you know who the area scout is on Preston Tucker?
I do know who the area scout is. Our own Alan Matthews.
It's our old colleague, Alan Matthews. So we're rooting for Preston Tucker signing.
That's not why I've turned. I will say that. I actually had not talked to Alan about Preston Tucker. I try not to talk about that stuff with Alan. Very excited for Alan to get Charlie Blackmon to the big leagues this year. Shout out to Alan on that. Let's go to the Dodgers. Chris Reed, Ryan O'Sullivan. We know the Dodgers' financial situation. Is there anybody the Dodgers are going to go crazy on here late, Jim, or are they just going to have to sign these guys for slightly above slot because they're college juniors?
Well, yeah, the Dodgers, their situation, don't have a lot of flexibility. Chris Reed's going to sign today, I think. And I think he's going to get a little bit more money than Sonny Gray got two picks behind him.
Sonny Gray got
1.54.
That is stunning, isn't it?
No, I mean, was Chris Reed really going to go back to Stanford?
But I'm just saying, though, that at the start of the draft, Jim, if you said Chris Reed was going to get more money than Sonny Gray, that would
shock. Yes, I see what you're saying. I thought you were saying it was stunning he was going to sign.
I like Chris Reed, but I mean, I'm just stunned that he got more than Sonny Gray.
There are a lot of agents out there who have college pitchers who were not excited that Sonny Gray signed for $118,000 over slot, but that was a case where I think the team knew Sonny very well. Sonny's extremely competitive, and they put the carrot of you sign now, you sign a couple weeks ago, and we'll get you to AA before the end of the season, and you'll be in great shape to make the big league team at some point next year.
Right.
And then, it's like we're talking, Sonny's another guy who bet on himself.
Right.
He
should
have held
Sonny
out for 3 weeks and probably gotten closer to $1.8, $2 million. But Sonny'd rather – Sonny Gray. He wants to compete.
I love Sonny Gray.
Yeah,
I hope that people, when they think of Sonny Gray, that the first two things they think of is that he got less money than Chris Reed and that Vanderbilt left him out too long in the College World Series and he blew that game in the eighth inning against I guess it was Florida. Because Sonny that day, his compete tool was on full display. And for the best and the worst reasons, he did not have his best stuff that day or his best command, but he kept his team in the game for seven innings. And I'm rooting for Sonny Gray big time. And I want people to think I want expectations for Sonny Gray to be high, because whatever people's expectations for Sonny are, his are higher. But I just can't believe that in the end he's going to sign for less than Chris Reed. It's crazy.
Well, it's the system, John.
I know.
He signed first. The guy who signs last gets more money. So anyway,
what a
they'll
system.
Get Chris Reed done today, I think, for somewhere, you know, a little bit north of Sonny at $1.54 million. And that might be it for the Dodgers. I don't know that they're gonna be able to sign Ryan O'Sullivan in the fourth round or Jamal Moore in the 10th round. And you know, I just don't know if they have any more, you know, anything else left in their wallet after they pay Chris Reed. That might be it.
So is Ryan O'Sullivan gonna be our top prospect at NAIA next year? Is that what you're telling me? He's really going back to school?
I don't. Well, he's been at what? I mean, he started San Diego State, and he was going to transfer to. You know, he had academic problems there. Was going to transfer to Florida International. Couldn't get in there academically, so he transferred to Oklahoma City, an NAIA program. But there's some kind of I never realized this before this year. You know, there's a transfer. You have to get a release when you transfer, an athletic release. You know, from an NCAA school to NCAA school. Which you obviously don't have to go from NCAA to NAIA, but there's apparently some kind of academic transfer that he could not get going from San Diego State to Oklahoma City. So he was academically unable to pitch in Oklahoma City last year. So,
right.
Will he be in school next year? I don't know. Will he be draft eligible next year? Probably better way to word it.
There you go.
Although that said, I'm surprised this guy's really not. He's really not going to sign. We'll
sign
see,
already.
But.
Sign.
I just don't think the Dodgers can go over slot on him.
Sign for slot, Ryan.
You would think. Yeah, I would agree. I don't understand what would be gained, but because he didn't pitch this year in a game.
I know.
But you know, again, we'll see. You know, maybe the Dodgers will surprise us, and you know, the slot's right at 200, and maybe they'll come up with some more money for him. Who knows?
The Padres, Jim. This might be the most watched team in the National League, isn't it? For their draft, I mean, they've got a lot riding on this draft. And they have a lot of players unsigned. Joe Ross, Michael Kelly, Brett Austin, Austin Hedges. That's pretty much it for their draft. I mean, I guess they probably have some fallback guys later on. But over-under, I'm setting the over-under at 2 of those 4 signing. Are you going over or under that?
Well, I think you'd have to go 2.5 to really make it.
All right,
really
2.5. I'll go 2.5.
I think that's a good to over under. I would bet over. I think they'll get 3 done, but I think it's going to be tough. You know, I was asking their scouting or their assistant GM who helps oversee the scouting department, Jason McLeod, and I said, you know, what is more hectic, this year's signing deadline or last year's signing deadline? Because last year's signing deadline, his wife was giving birth to twins on the deadline day, and they, you know, didn't sign the number 9 overall pick in the draft in Carsten Whitson, and they offered AJ Venegas, you know, big first round money. And didn't sign him, and they signed John Barbado. You got a 7-figure deal. So there was a lot going on. And Jason said that he thought this year's sign deadline would be less hectic from a personal standpoint, but in terms of getting deals done, it might be more hectic. They have more balls in the air right now. You know, we talked about Joe Ross some. You know, it's believed they've offered him, you know, in the neighborhood of $2.5 million and have been turned down. So you know, that one's a big number. You know, Michael Kelly might be the easiest sign of the four.
Okay.
I think he's going to be the easiest of the four to sign. Brett Austin, I think, is looking for Will Myers money, which is $2 million. And I don't think Brett Austin's getting $2 million from the Padres. So they might not sign him if he doesn't come down. Austin Hedges was a guy we heard from the beginning of the draft of all the, you know, top prospects coming into the year might have been the toughest to sign. And he is a tough sign. I don't know what his number is. I think he's a case, and he's represented or advised by Scott Boras, committed to UCLA, exceptional defensive catcher. I think that's a case where Austin has a number, and I don't know what that number is. And if you get to the number, he'll sign. But if you don't get to the number, he's not going to sign. So, again, if we play the over-under game, it might – I'll do some quick math here in my head. It might take you – $7.5-8 million to sign all 4 of those players.
That was
it's
my
also
next
possible.
Question.
$7.5 million might not be enough for all 4 of these guys if they all hang tough on their asking price. So we'll see. I bet they get at least 2 of them done and maybe 3. And I think a guy who's always kind of fascinated me because he's always in my draft state. I think they're going to get Birch Smith done the 14th round for third round money or so at some point. But you know, those top 4 guys are where their focus is right now.
Birch Smith is fascinating. I agree with you. I don't know as much about him as you do, but he interests me. He had a pretty up and down year this year for the Sooners. Big arm. Yeah, he's interesting. And finally, the National League, Jim, the Giants, your defending world champions. They got a couple of O-State ballers hanging out there. Andrew Susak and Josh Osich, who are both interesting cases. You know, I forget if Susak's an eligible sophomore or not. I know that
he is.
That's what sophomore. I thought he was. You got Osich, who's a redshirt, who's had some injury issues. You know, they have a lot of unsigned guys out there. What's your take on the Giants? What's left for the Giants to do for a fairly aggressive, I would say, scouting department or John Barr? They seem like they'll go out there and get stuff done if they want to, but they definitely work on their own rules. The Giants have their own way of looking at the game, but they're not part of the pack. Do you think they're going to get Susak and Osich done? And what about Ricky Oropeza? Is he just a typical college junior above slot guy?
It's going to be, you know, all four of those guys again are college juniors, or Susak's a draft eligible sophomore. So I think that these are probably all guys who, for the most part, are being told right now, slot. I think they get Susak done. Again, they took him in the second round. He's going to cost, you know, he's not going to. I always liked Andrew Susak as more of a first round talent, like second half of the first round talent. You know, his slot is 4'11. He's not going to sign for 4'11. I'll bet they get him done. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if he got first round money. Oropeza. You know, he's a tough one. I mean, he's got a big tool in his power. Also, has a very strong arm, although it's kind of negated at first base where he needs to play. He's a Boris guy. I don't know what the expectation is on him. I mean, to me, Ricky Oropeza could have gone maybe a round higher in the draft, but, you know, he's a guy with big power who swings and misses a lot, and he's right. Limited to first base. So, you know, I don't know how much leverage he really has. I would think they'd get him done. You know, Osich, to me, is the real wild card. You know, he had Tommy John surgery, missed all of last year, got hurt again at the end of this season. He's already 22 years old. You know, is he really going back? You know, especially, you know, as a 23-year-old? I don't know. Because I want to say Osich is a redshirt junior, isn't he?
I just can't remember.
Yeah, but anyway, I know he's 22. So anyway, but I think his depends on his physical status, which nobody knows. And I got to think with Ray Black, their seventh rounder, Pittsburgh, right-hander, you know, probably relief pitcher. I think they get him done. And I can't, you know, I think he's, you know, probably gonna get done for a little bit over slot if he hasn't signed at this point. But I would anticipate that would be it. I don't see an obvious late round guy that they'd pour a bunch of money into.
And I think the complicating factor in all this, Jim, might be the fact that Pat Casey, all these rumors at Oregon State with Susak and Osich, that Pat Casey might retire, might move into administration there. I wonder if that affects any of the decision-making of these Oregon State players. But I just love the Giants. Traditionally, they hit the Pacific Northwest very hard. They were there with I cannot remember the name of that area scout. He's not the same guy anymore, but they got to hood up Lewis Clark State for them. You know, they got Marvin Bernard and Steve Reed and Steve Decker and a ton of, you know, Keith Folk, a ton of guys out of the Pacific Northwest in the past. And Osich, he's a fourth-year junior. He was a 2007 high school guy. So it's time for him to go out. But I don't know that the Pat Case situation will necessarily – impact those guys, but it could be one other thing to watch. We've gone well past an hour on this podcast of the National League. We will come back. You can, if you're a National League fan or a National League team is your team, thanks for listening to the podcast. Jim and I will come back on the other side with part two of our draft deadline spectacular podcast on baseballamerica.com. For Jim Callis, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you on that podcast. Until then, so long, everybody.